The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
Oops, he throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. This is episode 37 and it is Broncos weekend as we review the Broncos
preview
game. What did I say? Did I say review again?
We're back to this again.
And here we go. And Alex, how are you doing, Alex?
Oh, I'm great. I literally just spent the last 9 hours studying statistics from 11:30. My brain is fried, so don't make me do the math. But whatever 11:30 to 8:30 is, I basically studied statistics the whole time in university. So I'm neither here nor there, really.
So that's the stats guy, Alex. What's coming up on the show, Alex?
But yeah, to avoid me talking the whole time, we have Joe Biscaglia on to do an interview. It's not exactly a Broncos preview interview. We talk about the team. We take the pulse of the team as a whole. We talk about Josh Allen, Brian Daboll, and the defense, and just kind of get an insider's perspective of how the team is and what's going on. So that will play as soon as I shut up. So here's that.
And we are joined on the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues once again by Bills beat reporter Joe Biscaglia. Joe, thank you very much for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a real treat last time.
That's good.
So Joe, just getting right in, the only thing anybody wants to talk about is Corey Bohorquez. but honestly, no, it's Josh Allen. That's all we tend to talk about. I try and steer it away, but we always come back to him. So he had a great game last week. How much of that was just because he played against Miami, and how much of it was attributed possibly to him progressing?
I think it was a bit of both, because there were certain areas against Cleveland of his that I felt he regressed. And the top of that list is probably against Cleveland. He was leaving the pocket prematurely, which is something that I thought he had under control, especially after he came back from his elbow injury last year. He was a lot better at that. And this year it hasn't really been a problem. But because Cleveland was putting on some pressure, and he didn't feel as confident in the throwing windows or something along those lines, and he was just leaving it prematurely. And what that does, it takes away your throwing base, which makes you more inaccurate. It probably props you up to potentially make more mistakes, because you're seeing things just, and his tendency is to roll right, usually always. And doing so, sometimes he puts the ball in jeopardy of being picked. I remember one play where he tried to feed it to, I think it was Dawson Knox, around like 15, 20 yards down the field. And if Cole Beasley, who was around 10 to 11 yards down the field, hadn't jumped up and tipped it with his hand, I'm fairly certain it would have been picked off and that interceptionless streak would have ended. But against Miami, he did a much better job of it. And this is the one thing that I keep coming back to with Josh Allen that makes him such an intriguing prospect and really tantalizes with what he could become, because he is not stubborn to change. I have seen at least 4 or 5 times now in his short career where he does something just terribly the week before, and the very next week it's fixed. And he makes a conscious effort to do so. This time around, it was that. I mean, after the New England game, he threw the 3 picks and he was careless with the ball. Since then, he's thrown 1 interception. So I think it was a bit of both. Miami stinks, but there was some progress there, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, people know when they listen to this that me and Alex have actually not really been bothered about Josh actually throwing a 300-yard game. Does that worry you? Because some people may think he's leaving points on the board, but then again, it could be a complete game that we're actually they're playing, regardless of whether he's throwing 300 yards or not.
Yeah, I think it's a little overrated myself. Much like when you look at the totality of his day against Miami, let's just take that as the example, since it's the most recent one. I mean, yes, he only threw for 252 yards, I think it was, but he also added over, you know, he also added yards.
54 yards on run.
That got him over. That got him over 300 yards total, and he had 4 touchdowns to 0 turnovers and 0 chances of turnovers. So that, to me, is just as effective. And this is also not even taking into account that he didn't even have the full game to go after all those yards. They were in run down the clock mode at around the 7-minute mark of the fourth quarter. So I tend to think it's overblown. I do.
Yeah.
I think it will wind up happening one of these weeks, but the week that it happens is probably when the Bills are trailing and they need a bunch of yards and there's some garbage time stats to be had, and it won't feel as convincing as maybe those others. But I think with Allen, the best way to kind of go about it at this point in his career is to help buoy him with a competent running game, so that way he doesn't have to put so much pressure on himself, which sometimes he does, and trying to play the hero too often. That's something he's been trying to work through, and he's done a better job of it, but they need to eradicate that before they move on into full-on pass-first offense mode.
Yeah.
So the one thing that I spent a lot of time on our last few shows was talking about Brian Daboll and breaking him down. There's a lot of talk surrounding him every game, a few bad drives, and it's, oh, fire him. And then there's a good drive, and Twitter's like, it's all fine now. It's frustrating for everyone watching and analyzing this team. So, what's the average there? I mean, for context, on my last show, I dug into his past and noticed that he has never had a passing offense that ranks higher than 22nd in the league. So based on his history, for me at least, I don't see how he was the good choice to come to bring in for a project type quarterback. What does Daboll mean to Allen, and is he the right guy?
Well, that's a complicated question.
Yeah.
That will yield a complicated answer, and I don't think we have that answer fully just yet. In terms of Dable's previous results in his last stops, I think going back and looking at it, the best quarterback he had maybe was Colt McCoy, if I'm not mistaken.
He did have J.P. Lossman one year in Miami.
Oh, well, that should have made his career right then and there. I think for him, Josh Allen has been the most talented quarterback he's dealt with. And I do quite like his mind. And I know that's not exactly a popular opinion amongst the fan base, because they see a lack of results from one week to the next, where they're scoring fewer than 20 points and not consistently moving the ball. But what I'm seeing is still a mind trying to play the chess game with the opponent and trying to attack the weaknesses of the opponent. And, you know, I kind of liken this theory or ideology to basketball in the same way. Like, if you're a coach in basketball and you concoct an out of bounds play with right at the end of the game, you need a game winning shot to go on and win or tie the game. You draw up a play. Your players go and implement this play. Now, it could be a complete bust of what you had drawn up, or they could have ran it perfectly. And the only way it is called successful or unsuccessful is if the ball actually goes in. And I just think the whole process of critiquing play calling is a little short-sighted in that respect, because a lot of it has to do with player execution, and that, and a certain amount of that has to fall under the offensive coordinator's umbrella too. But at some point, the player needs some culpability too. And I think what he's dealing with is a younger roster on offense that have had to go through some lumps throughout the year because they haven't really gelled together. The offensive line seems to be playing very well as a unit right now, but then you have a young quarterback in Josh Allen who's still trying to feel his way through it. And odds are the execution isn't always going to be there. In addition to the fact that you have a rookie tight end playing the majority of snaps, and you have one of your top three wide receivers being a guy who was put on the waiver wire last year in Isaiah McKenzie. So I get the Dable criticism, and I think there are some spots where he puts some personnel packages on the field that just doesn't make sense. But at the same time, I still like the mind. I like the concepts, and I think Bills fans should be willing to see a third year with those guys, because honestly, what would set Allen back the most is probably bringing in a new voice in his ear, and as opposed to, because they are seeing tangible changes and tangible development from Josh Allen from what they first had with him. And I think a lot of that has to be attributed to Brian Dable.
Yeah. For sure. I did say that based on like what I know about McDermott and Bean, is I foresee a third year kind of no matter what, based off how the season has gone so far. So, yeah, I would, with progression from year one to two, he's gotten better. Hopefully, yeah, from two to three, it gets much better. Because we're still in the low 20s, at least Allen is, in terms of numbers. And to be middle of the pack, if we can get into like the 14, 15 range, that's all I could ask for, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's still just the I guess, the very beginning stages of where a young quarterback can go. I mean, I think a lot of this conversation gets influenced by the fact that Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson have had the success that they have so early into their careers. And so there's a very clear keeping up with the Joneses here to where if your young quarterback isn't doing the same thing, it's like, oh, well, that guy sucks. But it doesn't always have to be the case. I mean, Allen is a much slower developer than the others. And that's, it's not the best thing in the world, but it's also not a terrible thing, because if he gets to the apex in which they think he can, then they've done their job and they've been able to draft a franchise quarterback. But it's on them to bring along that slow development. And let's also not forget, this dude was rough around the edges coming out of Wyoming. I mean, for a first-round quarterback, he had a lot of raw talent, but not a lot of refinement. And they needed to go to square one with a lot of stuff, and they've been able to do so. And to Allen's credit, he has taken to that coaching and implemented it into his game. Now, how much better can he be? How much more can he raise his ceiling? That's to be determined. And I think a lot of that will be dialed up in the final month of the season and in the early stages of next year.
Yeah. I mean, he came out recently this week and saying that as an offense, they really found an identity for it. And obviously the Miami result pretty much backed that up. Do you think it is a combination of Dable and his awesome Tash being in the booth, getting an overview, and Ken Dorsey by Allen's side? Or is it just the streaming of the personnel and the playbook of the offense?
Yeah, I think I quite liked what Dable did to lessen his changes from personnel groupings last week, because it also played into a couple of different things that they changed, which was what you alluded to, him calling the plays from up above. And then another thing, which was a part of their early on game plan, and they did it in a lot of spots, was no huddle. Now, I think from what they were trying to accomplish, keeping the core five of John Brown, Cole Beasley, Isaiah McKenzie, Dawson Knox, and Devin Singletary out there is a smart one, because those are their five best playmakers right now. But when you couple that with having Dable up top and you put a no huddle into the situation, then that allows you to get to the line, take a look at the defense and what they're bringing at you and what you might want to dial up. And there's also this factor. Brian Daboll can now, as of a few years ago, once they changed the communication rules, Brian Daboll can now communicate directly into Josh Allen's ear, which up until the 15-second point of the play clock. So if you go no huddle and you aren't substituting, that is that much more time for the offensive coordinator to potentially see what the defense is doing. And maybe, and you don't want to get too lost into it and just constantly being the brain for Allen in that capacity. But if you see something glaring that Allen isn't seeing, you, it affords you that amount of time to be able to diagnose or to make a change or to get yourself out of a play that that might not work. So
yeah.
I don't know how much tinkering that Daboll does. I think the only people that know that are the people that's in the booth and Josh Allen. But I do think it at least gives them that chance. And I wonder if we see a bit more no huddle, because by leaps and bounds this year, that was the most comfortable we've seen Josh Allen at any point in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the O-line giving him a lot of time and a lot of protection in there. You obviously, we mentioned the personnel, and Cole Beasley is obviously one of the key guys in that five. Why is it that we've not seen better numbers from him and seen nothing from Robert Foster? Is it the plays and the play calling, or just Allen missing him when he's actually going through his progressions?
I think I'll start with Foster. He is very limited as a route runner. And I know he had those stats last year, but he's just, it's very, I used to play wide receiver. That was my position. So I tend to really look at route running more than anything. And a lot of times Robert Foster is just depending on his pure athleticism as opposed to actually going through the finite steps that you need to in your breakdowns. And, you know, as someone who isn't athletic enough to separate just based on pure running ability alone, I tend to get a little, I tend to value the ability to run routes more precisely a lot more. And Foster isn't doing that. Cole Beasley is, Isaiah McKenzie is, John Brown is, he's leaps and bounds the best route runner on the team. So because of that, it lessens the impact that Foster can have. Now, I will say he does put a strain on the defense to where whenever he's out on the field, they have to account for him. But you can only do that so many times a game until they tune it out and know that you're not actually going to the guy. So they just have to pick their spots with him. In terms of Beasley, what's he averaging? About four catches a game for 44 yards a game. I mean, I guess that's about where, I mean, maybe you would want him to get into the 85-90 catch range, but as long as he's moving the chains, and if he continues to be a potential impact player in the red zone area, then that's a big thing for him. But I do think in this game against Denver coming up, there's a chance where he could be depended on quite heavily, because John Brown will be up against Chris Harris, which is a tough matchup in itself. Denver's defense has a really good defensive line, whether it be from their core three defensive linemen to their pass rushing outside linebacker Von Miller. I mean, those guys can get after it. So Allen's going to want to get the ball out of his hand quickly, which could, in fact, highlight what Cole Beasley is able to do best, which is get open quickly, even though it's not far down the field. So I think there could be some good days for Cole Beasley coming up. And don't rule out the fact that in a couple of games here, or after this Denver game, we get into hashtag revenge game mode for Cole Beasley. And he was not very happy when he left Dallas.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Denver's defense. Let's talk about our own for a minute. Just kind of, it's been hard to find anything to complain about other than like the run defense. But I mean, even a few games ago, we had a show like 4 weeks ago where we were like, there's nothing to complain about. And we didn't even talk about the defense. But pouring through some things, I mean, is there a reason maybe for so few takeaways, which is ranked 22nd, and QB pressures, which is ranked 18th? I don't want to be greedy and expect them to be good at everything. That's maybe asking too much. Or are those expectations warranted? Is that kind of like what the focus of this team is, right?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of meat on the bone there in terms of why they're not getting takeaways. And I think you laid out the perfect statistic. They're not getting pressure on the quarterback. They're not affecting the quarterback nearly enough. And it's one of the major reasons that last week against Miami, we saw the Bills give Shaq Lawson more snaps than Trent Murphy. Now, Trent Murphy was their free agent signing a couple of years ago, had a phenomenal first game of the season. And since then, he's dropped off a cliff. He's not getting any pressure on the quarterback. I will say against Miami, he looked a lot better than he has for most parts of the season, but it hasn't been good enough. And what they've seen happen is Jerry Hughes, who is by far their best pass rusher, he's been getting double teamed a bunch, been getting chipped a bunch. And because Trent Murphy isn't winning his one-on-ones on the other side when the starters are on the field. So to try and counter that, the Bills use Shaq Lawson more. They tried to put Jerry Hughes over on the left side of the defense against the right tackle. I mean, they're just trying different things. They've tried Lorenzo Alexander on the outside and putting Shaq Lawson at defensive tackle. They've tried putting Trent Murphy at defensive tackle to try and put him against a slower moving guy inside. They're trying to manufacture it themselves, which is good because they know the problem, which is not getting enough heat on the quarterback. But I will say another part of this is pure randomness. I mean, turnovers, the Bills have been around the ball pretty at least a couple of times a game per game since their last interception, which was week 7, the Tre'Davious White pick against Miami at the goal line. That was their last interception, which is kind of crazy to think about considering all of the different playmakers they have on this team. But so much randomness when it comes to turnovers. I remember 2017 when I remember the play exactly. I think it went off of AJ Green's chest plate and right into the breadbasket of Jordan Poyer. Like, that's just dumb luck. But you also have to be in the position to make those plays. And the Bills have been in those positions. Mm-hmm. Like, against Cleveland, here's another one, where I think it was Baker Mayfield. He threw the ball up. He lofted it a little bit to Jarvis. No, it was Odell Beckham along the sideline. And Tre'Davious White saw the route developing where it was, cut it off short, was right in position to make a play. It goes right through his hands. And Jordan Poyer, who also read the play, beelined over to where the trajectory of the ball would have gone. And if Tre'Davious White had just covered Odell Beckham Jr., Jordan Poyer has a pick with probably 30 yards to go in front of him. So it's just kind of dumb luck sometimes. But I think against this quarterback, Brandon Allen, who tends to throw the ball up to guys like Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant, I think there's some opportunity there for the Bills to finally end that streak of not forcing an interception.
Yeah, and also up until the last game, they only never let a 100-yard receiver in a game, obviously until last week. But with Ed Oliver, obviously, is it a case that he's struggling because it's the adapting to the NFL from where he was playing at Houston? Is it a case he doesn't fit the scheme, or is it just the fact that he's not that strong against the run, or Jordan Phillips is just having a stellar season that obviously Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott are going to go with a hot hand in Phillips over Ed Oliver?
I mean, I'll tell you what, I the whole time this thing has happened where they've put Jordan Phillips ahead of Ed Oliver, I felt like an Ed Oliver truther the entire time because I don't think he's been bad. I really don't. Mm.
Oh, it's not that I think that he's bad. It's just, I mean, looking at the snap counts at the end of every game, I'm just surprised that his usage is so low.
Yeah, I agree there. And we've seen this before with Sean McDermott, with young players especially, and young players that he knows are going to play a weighty role for him moving into the future. I remember Matt Milano's first season. Yeah. Where they brought him along very slowly. They were starting Ramon Humber over him. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Ramon Humber was freaking terrible. And every single week, I felt like McDermott was getting pissed off at me because he's like, because I continue to ask about Ramon Humber versus Matt Milano. And because you can clearly see Matt Milano was the more talented player, but they also don't want to give the full thing to rookies or young players right away, especially if they've you know, maybe triggered something where they aren't working as hard as they need to. Now, that's not to say Ed Oliver isn't a hard worker or anything like that, but sometimes they just need something, a little bit of a spark. And that's what McDermott liked to do. And if you notice in that Miami game, the snap counts were a lot closer to even than they had been the previous 2 weeks. Yeah. So I think Oliver's getting pressure. I think Oliver's a better run defender than Jordan Phillips, and I don't think that it's particularly close. Phillips has gotten more sacks. That's absolutely true, and he deserves credit for that. But I think if Ed Oliver shows the promise that he has in some of these reps, then those sacks will get there. And there's been a lot of plays that Ed Oliver has made that have, you know, helped the Bills' defense, whether it be a sack or an incompletion, that don't show up on his ledger. So I honestly think he'll be just fine. And I know there's some out there that are like, oh, yeah, absolutely, re-sign Jordan Phillips. I'm not as convinced, because when you have Ed Oliver waiting in the wings and Jordan Phillips is going to yield a pretty substantial free agent contract based on the year that he's had, that puts you in prime compensatory pick territory. And I also know that Brandon Bean has wanted to get into the comp pick game quite a long time now.
I mean, yeah, and also Ed Oliver will have that actual full off season to actually obviously work in the weight room and all that, and build himself up. I mean, you touched on it briefly just a while ago. One key to the game this Sunday against the Broncos. What's the one key for you?
Let's see. I look at matchups, and I think the most pivotal matchup, at least that I'm looking at from what the Bills must stop in order to get a victory, is Von Miller against Cody Ford. Ty Nsekhe is out with an ankle injury, and when you have that sort of talent like Von Miller being able to go up against a rookie, if that's a one-on-one situation, that's a situation that Miller is going to win, even though he's going into, or he's in his ninth season. Cody Ford struggles with speed to the edge and with players that can turn the corner and get to the quarterback. And that is Von Miller to a T. Von Miller doesn't always line up against the right tackle, but I'm sure he will quite a bit against Cody Ford. And it's going to be on the Bills to provide some sort of plan, whether it be having a tight end there tied to Cody Ford's hip, or chipping with the tight end before he goes off on his route, or chipping with a running back before he goes off on his route. They need to have a plan in place, or even getting the ball out of Josh Allen's arm a lot quicker than he has been in the past few weeks. But that is the biggest matchup that could flip the game from a Broncos perspective. And on the flip side, I think what the Bills could do against the Broncos offensive tackles could also be pretty weighty for this game, because the Broncos will either have Juwan James or Elijah Wilkinson at right tackle. James would be coming off a knee injury, and he's only played, you know, sparingly in one game out of the Broncos' past 9 appearances. So there's going to be some rust there. And then Wilkinson, the right tackle who has filled in for him, is not good whatsoever. So that's a chance for Jerry Hughes, Shaq Lawson, their left tackle, Garrett Bowles, who was a first-round pick. He's someone to exploit as well. He's not exactly a great blocker at this point. So I think if they can get some pressure on Brandon Allen, get him off his first read and get him a little uncomfortable, that's where he starts to unravel as a thrower. And once he starts to unravel, he's more prone to make mistakes. So that could be where the turnovers come into play.
Do you think, then, obviously going back to Von Miller against Cody Ford, obviously you mentioned either tight end or wide receiver chipping, get a tight end to block in. Do you envision, or would you see a scenario where, I'm assuming it would probably be Ryan Bates as the backup tackle actually coming in on certain plays as well, to have to go that sort of formation to try and stop Von Miller?
Yeah, that's interesting. Brian Daboll has not once this year gone with a 6 offensive lineman formation. So I wonder, maybe that might be a thing. But the only drawback to that is it takes one of your skill players off the field, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they're going to need everything they have to I think, move the ball successfully. So that way, you know, Denver's probably going to go one-on-one with Brown against Chris Harris for most of the game. And that would only give you three other targets against, let's see, the other six defenders. And the math doesn't work in that capacity. So I like the idea of it. And maybe they do it on some snaps, though. Dawson Knox is a fairly good blocker. Tyler Kroft is a really good blocker. And I think they could probably get by with chipping Von Miller. But I think the best defense against Von Miller is just to get the ball out of Josh Allen's hands quickly and try and let Cole Beasley and Dawson Knox and Tyler Kroft handle their business. And even Devin Singletary out of the backfield. Maybe get the screen game going against a pretty aggressive Denver defense. I think all of that will be the Bills' best friends this weekend.
Yeah. And one last question. Obviously, Pro Bowl voting is up and running. In your opinion, which one Bill is deserving of going to the Pro Bowl?
Micah Hyde. He does everything for the defense. I mean, if there is one player that I think the Bills couldn't live without, I think it's Micah Hyde. And he changes so much. You don't see teams trying to throw the ball deep against the Bills, and that's because of Micah Hyde, because he's such a good center fielder as that free safety. They know if they try to test them that he's going to be right there. And he's also got that center field background, baseball background, and he can bring in a pass that he has very good hands, so he can change a game back there. And he's also very good with run support and getting everybody lined up. Even if the stats, the interceptions aren't there for him, he is, to me, the most important player on the field. And I think Tre'Davious White makes a case. I think John Brown makes a case. But at the end of the day, I don't know if the Bills are where they are without Micah Hyde back there. Just think about this defense with Jaquan Johnson at free safety as opposed to Micah Hyde, and that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. I mean, that was, again, the second time we've been for you, and we've had real good questions and all that. Once again, just remind our listeners where they can follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me right on Twitter at Joe Biscaglia. I've got a sneaky silent G in there. And then you can read all my work over at theathletic.com/Buffalo. Or you can listen to me and my co-host Matthew Fairburn on the Buffalo Beat, where you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts.
Perfect. Joe, thank you very, very much for once again appearing on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Thank you very much. Have a very good rest of the day.
All right, you as
well. Happy Thanksgiving, Joe.
You too.
Cheers, Joe.
All right, bye now. Right,
bye, man.
We thank Joe again for reappearing on the podcast, giving us great insight into the Bills, the offense, Josh Allen, and all that. And now we can hit what we've all been waiting for. Alex is going to talk about chili. No, that was the last episode, wasn't it?
I didn't make enough of it. I had like 4 servings. Well, I made 8 servings, but I ate it in 4 sittings. so yeah, I maybe put on a stone, whatever that is. I think I used that correctly. Did I use that term correctly? Yeah.
Probably.
One stone, 14 pounds. So
we'll save the weight for the Thanksgiving week.
Oh my God! Yeah, things are gonna happen there. But real quick, just to recap the Biscaglia interview, my favorite thing was when he said patience with the Allen Daboll kind of thing. And I think that's the most important thing. That's kind of what I was talking about a lot previously, is that, you know, this is the best quarterback he's ever had, and he's got a good mind for offense. Now we finally have an opportunity to see what his vision is meant to look like. So, yeah, it's been frustrating at times, but that's because of the people on the field. And the more time they have in this offense, the better it'll look. So just, strap in, because you're going to get another year of it.
Yeah. So moving on, we're 7-3. We're going back home to face the 3-7 Denver Broncos.
Here we have probably what I would consider the second best bad team that we'll play all year. In terms of all of the bad teams we've played, they've all been pretty bad, but I would feel comfortable saying Cleveland is, even though they just lost to Denver, Cleveland's the best worst team we played, and then Denver will be the second. Not based off of what they've done this year, but I'd say based off of the talent on the field, barring quarterback, obviously, in Denver's situation. But just some quick stats. You know how I mentioned the simple rating system about how teams are based off an average team of zero, where yeah. The Bills' offense is -1.9, sadly, still. No, sorry, the team is -1.9. The offense is, sadly, -3.7, but the defense is +1.8. The Broncos are actually better than us based off this rating system. Their offense is a little bit worse, -3.9. But their defense is a whole point better at +2.8. So their team, based off an average, is -1.1, and we're -1.9. So based on that, they should beat us. But luckily, that's not the only thing, and that's not how this works. You can also look at points per game. Bills score 21, Denver scores 17. So especially with this being a home game, I'm predicting a win. How about you?
Well, I think I'm trying to think back again to our prediction. I think when we did the original preseason prediction,
I think we both had this as a win.
Yeah, I still feel confident that it can be it will be a win. I think what we saw from Miami, the Miami game. Yes, everyone's going to say, oh, it's Miami. Miami is shit.
Yeah, but the first time we played Miami, it didn't look good.
Yeah, but they improved before they played us. They improved a couple of weeks. Okay, yes, once they beat the Jets. Did they beat the Jets? No, they lost the Jets. I can't remember. But they've won two games. So one was against Washington. I can't remember who the other one was against.
The Colts, which was impressive, but again, it was Matt Moore at quarterback for the Colts. So,
but judging on what we've actually, what we've done against them and what potentially is to come, and obviously Joe gave us a good insight, as we already knew, with the personnel of Brown, Knox, McKenzie, Singletary, and Beasley, and the fact that they should be trying to run the no huddle and the benefit of DeBall being in the booth. I think clearly it's all the hallmarks of a Bills win. And obviously we continue the form, which we have been showing, obviously came together more in the Dolphins game.
Yeah. I mean, before we even had the interview with Joe, I had notes down saying that I predicted a very low-scoring game, and on offense we should expect a lot of underneath stuff because the Broncos have such a good defense and the pass rush is so strong, so Allen's got to be quick. Everything that Joe said plays into what I had notes for this game is a lot of Beasley, Singletary out of the backfield, short stuff. The only trouble with that is that we've been, this season, one of the worst yards after catch teams. So that's going to need to be something that is fixed via, play calling and just coaching for this week. We talked about how Daboll is good at strategizing against what the other team can and cannot do. So expect some screens, some jet sweeps, and some short stuff to Cole and the other guys. I definitely don't think it'll be like 21-17. I think that this is going to be a real big, tough test for Josh. Probably something a little bit smaller. A little bit lower scoring. 3-0 wouldn't shock me. But then again, to be more realistic, 17-14 in that, or 17-13 kind of in that range. The scary thing is that Denver doesn't get their pressure via the blitz even. We blitz more than Denver does. And they hurry the passer 11% of the time, and we only have an 8.8 clip for that. But like I said, what plays into Josh's strength, we know this year, is the shorter passing game under 19 yards. Denver allows a 66% passer rating, which is statistically worse than the Dolphins. So if Josh could throw on the Dolphins, he should be able to throw on Denver. Just it comes up to Daboll making the right calls and making it easier for Josh. I mean, that was the whole game plan last week. Make it easier for Josh, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, the ball's going to have to look at ways because John Brown is going to go up against Chris Harris.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, so he's going to have to be a bit more skilled than usual to actually get the others involved, because you're going to have a pretty much a Trey White situation with Denver, with Harris actually locking down John Brown one side, like White will lock down Cortland Sutton. So it's how each offense can really make use of the other weapons. And as Joe said, with Cole Beasley, if we get to the end to the red zone, they should be looking to target him more there, because we've seen what he can do, where he can slip a defender.
I don't need them to change their philosophy in their red zone. Whatever they do is working. Mostly, it's so great because the teams that they're scared of Josh running, so that opens up that. And then when they forget about Josh, boom, he's in. So our red zone offense, I think the issue is going to be getting there. I mean, if they're able to, via kickoffs and just general field position, if they have us start deep in our own zone, it's going to be a hill to climb. It's not going to be kind of, you know, a few steps and boom, we're there like it was against Miami. So, yeah, that's the good thing about this situation is there's not a whole lot to talk about, because the most important thing in this game is Brandon Allen. He is bad at doing football things. And I think that's ultimately what's going to stop them from being able to beat us.
Yeah. I think if we can do what we did last week against the Dolphins, I think that was the most time, I think that was probably first time in ages that they actually, not only did they blitz quite often, but they actually blitz with Edmonds and Milano as well. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably their best games from a blitzing and tackle point of view than what we've seen for a while. Now, if we can dial that sort of pressure up again, I think that there's going to be a lot more mistakes from Brandon Allen, that we can capitalize on. I mean, it's just a case of being a bit more secure now against the run, because they have got Philip Lindsay, who is a good running back for where he came as an undrafted.
Yeah, I mean their running game is legit. I mean, they have I don't have it there. I only have the run defense, but yeah, I think that if our front seven focuses on stopping the run, then our secondary can focus solely on just playing man to man. All we have to worry about is Cortland Sutton. If he gets taken out of the equation, which Trey White's great at doing, and Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer back there locking things down, if we can stop the run, there's not a lot to worry about with Brandon Allen. I mean, he threw for 43%. They had a lead at halftime, a big lead at halftime, and he still finished the game only 43%. He's not throwing for big yardage. I mean, his average air yards is like 5 or 6. You want that to be closer to 8. He's not a runner, so you don't have to worry about that. The other thing on him is there's just not a lot of tape. There's not a lot of stats on him. So, but I think over the last two games against Cleveland and Minnesota, you see what he can do and what he can't do. And yeah, I'm not too worried about it.
The interesting thing I think we'll look to see is the other cornerback position outside of Trey White. because the last game against Miami, it was more of a split towards the end of Johnson mm-hmm. and Wallace.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a key matchup as well. Because, I mean, in the limited snaps, Kevin Johnson has started to pull away a little bit from Levi, who's had that little slump, the sophomore slump, so to speak. But I still rate him as a good cornerback. But if Johnson gets a nod, I feel more confident that our corners can actually lock down, which then give us more chance to blitz and pressure, which will cause that mistake.
Yeah, looking at the injury report, they got some guys that are banged up. Luckily, Bradley Chubb is out, so that's a good start for us. But they're still getting really good pressure with who they have. You have some offensive tackles, offensive guards, offensive linemen for them did not practice or limited so far this week. So, Joe talked about it in the interview about Trent and Shaq and Jerry needing to, Shaq's been doing well, but this might be a game where, based off of the strong showing that Oliver had last week, he gets more snaps and we might be able to do something, because that's going to be the way to go. You stop the run and then on third down, you affect the game. And if we're going to force these guys, just like we did against Washington, in the second half, once we stopped the run and they had to start throwing the ball, they were completely ineffective. And that could be another situation this week. And that's going to be the focus. Start strong, start fast, take the ball out of the running back's hands, and there it is. Because normally I say don't focus on your next opponent until the game's over, but with the short week, you got to start looking at Dallas right now.
Yeah. So it would be a case of I would just say open up the playbook a little bit more, especially if you're looking at the next opponent, Dallas, just give them a lot more to think about rather than running a few so-called vanilla plays. But
I would respectfully disagree with you there. Whatever worked last week, stick to that. When the playbook was opened up is when we had substitutions on every play and Josh was burning through his brain.
Open up the playbook with that main personnel
get more for the base to do. There's at this point in the season, there's probably not a lot that hasn't been seen already, but when you're looking at our schedule, you got to think that you could get to where we are right now with a lot of normal stuff. I think that if you have a trick or a go-to play or something that you know is going to work, it's going to be starting next week when you want to start seeing some new things out of this offense, some more creative stuff.
So the key on offense for this game, I assume, is obviously keep with the short intermediates and obviously to counteract the rush from Von Miller and all the other pressures is hopefully they perfected that the screen game, whether dump off to Singletary or even the wide receiver screen or the jet sweep.
I mean, keep their defense on the field, get them tired, and then carve them up with a play action, this isn't a game where I think you need to worry about ball control or time of possession, because I can't see Denver really holding the ball. I mean, being able to do anything on offense. I don't want to regret that, because, in the NFL, anything can happen any week, and they do have a good rushing attack. But, I look at their coaching staff, and I'm not impressed. I'm not expecting anything too creative. I think they're just in a waiting period. I mean, I don't know. What are the Broncos? Are they a rebuilding team? Are they a good roster that need a quarterback? Do you think if they had a quarterback, they'd be in a playoff scenario? I mean, looking at their wins and losses, Lost to the Raiders. Just barely lost to the Bears. Handily lost to the Packers. Just barely lost to the Jaguars. Beat the Chargers, which is crazy. You know, the NFL is crazy, man. They beat the Chargers, but the Chargers beat the Packers. And then, you know, with the Browns, they beat the Ravens. But, you know, it's just, you know, anything can happen. So I don't want to write this game off.
No, yeah. I think going to your question, I think it's possible that, in my opinion, I think they're a team that's just, that's almost like Buffalo. Before, obviously, we signed Josh Allen, they're looking for that one quarterback.
Yeah, so they're like us if we had Nathan Peterman as our starting quarterback.
I think
I'm sure we all want to remember, right?
Yeah, it was great. He was better than Jim Kelly.
The legend.
Yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't want Nate Peterman in their 53-man squad?
We just lost all of our listeners. There's literally no one listening anymore right now.
Well, we could combine that with our special teams talk as well. But
yeah,
no,
this is the answer to all the special teams problems for last week. Kick it out of the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously going back to the Broncos, where I think they are. I think they are like the Bills on offense. I think there are more rebuilding on their offense than ours. Their O-line is weaker.
Yeah.
They've lost. They traded Emmanuel Saunders.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've got a good run game. So, and in Noah Fant, they've got a good tight end that they can groom with a new quarterback. It just seems that the legend, the Hall of Fame, John Elway, legendary quarterback, can't bloody scout a good quarterback for his team.
Yeah.
I think he's
stuck in his own generation.
Mm.
That's all. I mean, that's the only reason why you bring in Joe Flacco, big, tall, strong arm. I mean, dude, it's not 1988 anymore, you know?
Yeah. I think if John Elway wasn't there, I would say the Broncos would be a constant championship contender on there. I think...
depending on who they're...
Yeah,
quarterback is.
But obviously with that, they wouldn't have Elway actually really trying to force his own how he was as a quarterback on the quarterback, whether it be signing a Joe Flacco, going with Paxton Lynch, and obviously Chad Kelly, who obviously is now out of the NFL completely again.
Yeah, it's been ugly.
But I think the Broncos, I see similarities to us from last year, pretty much, when we needed to work on the O-line. We had a growing pain, say, at wide receiver and quarterback. So it's going to be an interesting time for Broncos fans, but good time for us, especially for our defense, to stop that offense.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all I have on it. It's like I said, I mean, I have way more notes just right now even about the Cowboys game. It's just, this is the last game where we can feel comfortable about a W. Mm. And I even say that because the Jets game at the end of the year, based on weather, who the hell knows what's going to happen, you know? I mean, you could be having a blizzard or anything there, so those kind of games are always up toss-ups. I just don't want to have it harken back to, when was it, 2003, where we have to beat the Steelers backups to get in, and we couldn't. So, yeah, I mean, let's lock down this W that we're expected to have and focus on the tough part of our schedule, the only tough part of our schedule, the only challenge, which is where we're really going to find out who we are.
Yeah. So,
But then again, this game will, based on their defense, this game will be a good litmus test of what our offense can do.
Yeah. So one quick question before we wrap it up. It's a quick quick response. Josh Allen came out this week and said 10 is the magical number. Do we get 10?
Points this game? Yeah, I think we get 10 points this game. No. Yeah. I mean, they need to take last week's success and make it consistent. If they can't, then I think we could end up 9-7. Optimistically, best case scenario, we go 11-5. But most likely, yeah, it's 10-6.
That's cool. I think it's, we are going to get double digits. We will get into the playoffs. Hopefully we'll come back on Monday when we do the review and do the preview, because obviously a short week with the Thanksgiving game, and obviously if you listen to us in the UK, it's going to be on Sky Sports, 9:30 start. Bills at the Cowboys, but Monday, me and I are actually going to come in. We're going to review, hopefully, win number 8, and obviously preview the Cowboys. Is there anything else you want to add before I sign off?
I'll be in London for the Cowboys game, so let's grab a beer.
Yeah.
Catch me hook up with me on Twitter. Jesus, what's my Twitter handle? who knows? @Alex_Penn86. Find me on Twitter. Let's get a gathering at some pub anywhere in London. Let's watch the game. Go Bills.
Yep. So for me and for Alex, I will say good afternoon, good evening, good morning if you listen to this in the morning. Continue subscribing, downloading, follow us on our Twitter accounts, keep interacting, and say go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Yeah, not us.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on 3, 1, 2, 3, Bills!